This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
One more case I want to talk about today. The defense filed a motion to dismiss Aaron Spencer's murder case, and the basis is something law enforcement really can't explain. An SD card from Michael Fossler's dash cam with front-facing and rear-facing video and audio from the night of the shooting. Gone. Disappeared. Poof, David Copperfield showed up and woo, took the Statue of Liberty and the SD card with it. Officers testified they had it. Now they can't produce it. They admitted they didn't follow their own protocols. Judge Ralph Wilson didn't just shut it down. He actually left the door open. And that's just one of the several defense wins heading into a June 22nd trial date, if we hit a trial date. Wilson has reversed multiple rulings by the removed judge, opened the door to new witnesses, and allowed the FBI expert testimony the previous judge had blocked entirely in the Aaron Spencer case. The prosecution says the public doesn't know the full story yet. Defense attorney Bob Mata is with us to help break all this down over the weekend. You had a fundraiser. We showed up over to it on Saturday, and you raised some funds for the Aaron Spencer Defense Fund. I think that is awesome and great. And go over to Defense Diaries and check out some of that coverage if you want the full 12-hour version of the story.
And
but if we can condense the 12 hours and specifically about the SD card stuff down here to about, 10 minutes. Give us an update over here. What the hell is going on with the SD card? I know we talked about it a bit on Saturday over on Defense Diaries and you're live, but give our audience some insight here as to what's happening.
Yeah, and by the way, you guys were fantastic. First segment, these two handsome bastards were on with Brandy Churchwell. Guys knocked it out of the park like you always do. I mean, the SD card is one of those perplexing things where you're sitting here trying to figure out where the hell it went. Mm-hmm. I mean, it only touched two cops' hands in theory that we know of.
Yeah.
Like, that's the party line. The party line coming from the sheriff's office down there in Lone Oak is that only two cops had hands on it. McCain, the one who grabbed it out of the truck as it was being towed away. And then, decides not to write any reports, create any evidence log. There's no chain of custody for 14 months. And, he claims that he goes ahead and he uses a converter, pulls the SD card out, pops it into his computer, watches four videos, all around 15 minutes long, and claims that there was nothing on there. There's nothing to see here. And then claims he sticks it back, back into the dash cam until it clicks, sticks it in an envelope, doesn't seal that envelope, still no chain of custody, still no evidence log, still no reports as to what he saw in there, hands it off to another sheriff or deputy sheriff, who then hand delivers it to the AG's office down in Arkansas, who does all of their forensic examinations for that particular department. And, AG's office comes back after many, many months and says, oh, yeah, by the way, there is no SD card. What the hell are you talking about? So defense doesn't know that this thing exists forever. You know, it's not until they see an email in discovery where McCain is sending that first cop who took it out of the truck, sends an email to the AG's office months later saying, hey, any luck with that thing there? We're wondering. We asked you to put a brick on this thing. We're looking to get the information. And, that's when the AG's office lets them know that there was no SD card in there. So, needless to say, the defense is furious when they find out about it. They file the motion to dismiss. There's a hearing that's held, full hearing. It was in front of Judge Elmore initially. She, of course, denied it. Judge Wilson, he gets appointed, retired judge, different breed of judge. And as you said, T, he's reviewed a few things, and he's changed the course on at least two. And this one's still pending. So they're now going to be able to put a grooming expert on. They're also going to be able to get into a little more of Fossler's whereabouts and what he was up to prior to his days in Lone Oak County, which is big because it's relevant to the story. So as far as that SD card goes, man, the thing's still pending. The brief was just filed by the defense. The state's going to file their response and pleading. You know, like during the course of that day, I had a lot of amazing people on, starting with you two and throughout the day. And it was great because in not one of the segments did I ever really have to steer away from Spencer. There was so much to talk about with so many different brilliant minds that it had made for really a fascinating day of legal discussion and just how this thing's going to play out. You know, I brought Mike King on. Mike King's not so sure it's a slam dunk NG. You know, yeah. Mike's like, man, you know, the 14, 15 shots could be an issue. And I'm like, well, I disagree with you. It's a tragic case because it begins and ends with that little 13-year-old girl who was victimized by a 67-year-old predator who continued to groom her after he's charged and bonds out. Like, he picks up right where he left off, and whether or not she was seeking help and she was in therapy, it didn't have the impact. People don't understand the depths of which grooming goes with these children. It is so insidious. It's not like, you know, you go to 3 counseling sessions and you're done with it. That's not how this thing works.
Yeah. And I'm glad they're looking at more in his background, because him going right back into it, it shows it's part of his life arc to be that old. This is not a thought experiment. I guarantee this is not his first essay of a minor. I guarantee it. Because he wasn't scared straight by being caught, because that would be a first offense. That would be, oh my God, I got to do something. No. He was right back in it. He was uncontrollable. And I'm so glad they're looking more of his background. Hopefully it becomes relevant on that. I mean, there's just, and also, Bob, I don't think so, but I just want to verify that those 14, 15 round shot, he did not have to do a reload, correct? As one magazine?
Correct.
Yeah, see, yep. That's I think is really the key thing there. It's like we talked about on your show the other day. I think this is really going to be relevant because of his background in military/law enforcement type stuff. Yes, you're training, man. You are just trained to unload until you can't shoot anymore to eliminate the threat. And that he deemed him as a threat because it's an imminent threat against his daughter, who had already been, we found out she was still sore. I don't even talk more than that.
Yeah.
I'm
obviously with you on that. And as far as the kind of the imminent threat goes, you know, the analysis is one that I think is probably going to be the hardest fought in terms of the number of rounds shot. But it doesn't work that way. If the jury reaches the conclusion that he was reasonable to believe that either his life and or his daughter's life was an imminent threat of serious injury or death, then, and they find that that was reasonable, it changes the analysis, because at that point it's not a position where the state's going to be able to say, okay, well, we're going to take this bullet by bullet, that the threat was at such a level that it was okay to shoot one bullet, but it wasn't okay for bullets 4, 5, and 6. They're not going to be able to do that.
Right.
That's going to work.
The imminent threat, you know, and I'm devastated by the fact that the fact is she had already been assaulted that night. So this wasn't even preemptive. This was still reactionary. This wasn't like him, you know, because they're saying it, you know, the naysayer is vigilante. That's hunting down with premeditation. No, it's not. She'd already been assaulted.
If I'm the defense, I'm making 2 primary arguments in terms of, was this a continuing felony in terms of that child in that car? And I'm pointing out the fact that he drove during this 6-mile high speed chase, that he drives right by Spencer's house. Could have pulled over, opened the door, pushed her out, kept speeding. If Aaron chases him down and puts him down, we're talking about a different case. You know, if Aaron stops and goes to make sure his daughter's all right and goes in and calls law enforcement, says, well, you know, he got my daughter out of the car and he took off. He's still driving. Different case entirely. That's not what happened here. He gets him off the road. So I'm pointing out the fact that this guy had the opportunity.
Yeah.
To pull over, quickly open the door, push her out, get out. And he's off again.
But still, after he already assaulted her and kidnapped her.
See, the problem for Aaron is he doesn't know that in the time. So it's like,
I know.
We can't, but I mean, trust me, Robin, I hear you, man. It's like, it's one of those facts. And when it comes out, like, I'm just big that this isn't a jury nullification case.
Right.
Like, I think it was justifiable. That's where I'm living and breathing in this case, you know, and there's folks out there that think, It's a nullification case. Either way, he's walking out of it. But I want Aaron Spencer walking out of that case where it's been adjudicated that he was justified in what he did.
So
not,
I know
not because the jury's trying to send a message to the government and saying, hey, look, you know, somebody does this shit to our kids, this is what's going to happen to you. Because then it slips into that conversation, was this vigilantism? And it wasn't.
Right.
This wasn't. And the other thing that I'm going to point out is that when that truck is stopped safely, I might add, that, and that was really the first act of defending another. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was him running the pit move. So the pit maneuver gets that car over. Nobody's going to argue that that wasn't reasonable.
Right.
So from that perspective, that analysis ends right there. Then you talk about the situation wherein you've got the vehicle parked. I'm arguing from the defense, Aaron Spencer's screaming for his daughter to get out of that truck and she's not coming. I don't know at this point, because I'm not privy and I haven't asked, whether or not Aaron can even see his daughter. I don't know if she's sitting in the window. I don't know if she's waving. I don't know if any of that's taking place. And the fact of the matter is, the person that gets out of the car isn't his daughter.
Right.
It's fucking Fossler.
Yeah.
That to me, like, if the daughter gets out of the truck, again, a second set of circumstances wherein Fossler could have said, get out of the truck, and then he takes off. Because Aaron's out of his truck, presumably, yelling and screaming for his daughter to get out. Fossler says, get out. If that doesn't happen, which it didn't, I am thinking either my child is dead.
Yeah.
Or bleeding to death.
This guy's coming to kill me because he does not give a fuck.
Right.
He does not care at all about his life. I mean, we know by the actions that he took that this guy cares not about his life or his liberty, because it's incredibly reckless behavior. If it's a guy who cares, like any normal person that wasn't completely demented and sick, would be staying a million miles away from that kid if they thought they had any chance on prevailing. She's the only living witness against him as to the assaults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to me, this thing lives in Aaron Spencer was absolutely reasonable in his belief that there was a continuing felony. And, it, you know, and if you have to lean in, they're going to lean into both self-defense and defense of others. You know, I mean, the defense of others, there's the third part of the section. There's this really interesting question about if it's a continuing pattern of domestic violence. And you are posed with this question. If you know anything about domestic violence statutes, there has to be some kind of relationship. Well, it appears that the state has thrown it out there that they were trying to say that this was a consensual relationship.
Holy
if that's
fuck.
The case, well, then you're able to come in with that, you know, that third
you
part.
Can't.
I mean, dude, it's like this trial, if it makes
what
it that
sick
far,
MF-er would say is it's not even legal for a 13-year-old to consent. There is no such thing.
She's 14 at the time, man.
It's serious
Arkansas,
questions of anyone who's raising that argument.
Like, yeah, dude, then they're on trial now. Anytime you see someone's trying to rationalize that away, it's like, all right, we're going to deal with this. You're next. So just stand by.
Yeah.
Just stand in the corner over there. We're coming after you next.
Exactly. Exactly. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and go check out all the coverage of this. Bob has done an extraordinary job on Defense Diaries. Wherever you get podcasts or on YouTube, go check it out. Subscribe and get your
Bob
fill on it. Yeah, my goodness. And Bob also has another program.
Oh, yeah, a little Buried inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. Check it out. It's audio only.
Yes.
I know all Tony's fans, you guys love some podcasts. It's worth your time. It's a pretty amazing story.
Go check it out. Defense Diaries. You can find all of the links over there, and Buried, also the John Wayne Gacy investigation. Search it wherever you get podcasts. All right. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you can get books. Go check that out
Please leave a review. Thank you.
Yes, and leave a review as
they help
well.
The algorithms.
Until next time, for Bob, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We will talk again.
Peace out, brother.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.